Welcome to the Biz Whiz podcast, where we connect today's business leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers with you. The format of this show is quick interview style, finding out what made our guests an expert in their space and sharing their story and lessons learned in the process. Get wise now. Become a Biz Whiz by listening to Biz Whiz. Now here's your host, Dan Hollis.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of BizWiz. This is the show where we dive into the minds of top business leaders, innovative entrepreneurs, and game-changing authors to bring you powerful insights and inspiration. Get ready for a great conversation tonight. Very excited about today's show. I'll be speaking with Rob Levine with Legal Solutions. Rob is a powerhouse in the legal world, a seasoned attorney, savvy entrepreneur, and dedicated philanthropist who spent over 25 years fighting for people with injuries and disabilities, earning him the proud nickname of the heavy hitter. But he doesn't stop at the courtroom. He also helps small to mid-sized law firms run smarter and more efficiently with services like medical record retrieval, certified legal staffing, and strategic consulting, helping them free up lawyers and paralegals so they can focus on what they do best, serving clients and winning cases. In addition, Rob is the author of the ebook Maximizing Law Firm Success, which is a blueprint for personal injury law firms that want to run leaner, smarter, and more profitably. It's packed with real-world strategies like focusing on high-value work, think case prep and client care, and letting go of time-draining admin tasks by handing them off to specialized teams. In the book, Rob makes a strong case for outsourcing where it makes sense, showing how law firms can cut costs and boost efficiency without sacrificing performance or their culture. Whether you're trying to grow, scale, or just get your head above water, Rob's book, Maximizing Law Firm Success, offers practical, straight-shooting advice to help law firm leaders sharpen their operations and drive serious results. Hi, Rob, and welcome to BizWiz.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'd like to kick off by asking you a very important question, and that is, what influenced your decision to get into law, and was there a specific area that you really wanted to excel in?
My entry into law was by accident, to be honest with you. So I started in law enforcement. And when I was a police officer, the law in Rhode Island, which is where I was a police officer, stated that the police department or the city you work for had to pay for your bachelor's, master's, and law degree. And so my original goal was to be a Fed. So I wanted to either do DEA or FBI. And I thought, okay, so I have the law enforcement background. I'll get my law degree, and that will be a perfect foray into working for a federal agency.
Right.
And I started law school, and in my seventh year as a police officer, I got into a bad car accident while I was working, which basically ended my career as a police officer, my future ability to be a Fed. And then I played the cards I got dealt, used the law degree to transfer into a career in law.
That's amazing. We were talking about that a little bit earlier, and I think you're the first person I've ever met that was a police officer and then became an attorney. It's very interesting.
Yep. Definitely not the normal path.
So what inspired you to start Rob Levine Legal Solutions, and what gap in the legal industry were you looking to fill?
So when I look back, right, the business experience that I have really came from where I started, which is at Gem Plumbing and Heating. So I went to law school with Anthony Gemma, the youngest of nine, and his brothers. After we graduated from law school, our plan was to open a law firm. They asked us to come work at the plumbing business. And so we opened a dinner and a movie theater. We bought 300 to 500 units of real estate. We grew the plumbing company from 50 guys to 300 guys, 5 million to 40 million. And then as well, on the side, I started to grow the law firm. It was me, then me and one, me and two, me and three. We're now me and 235 people. And I love business, and I love the idea of expansion, and I love technology, and I love really improving processes. So as the law firm grew, early on, I realized, for instance, record retrieval. It made sense to use an outside company. So first we tried using someone else. It was a disaster. And we created our own record retrieval company in-house. And then after a long period of time, I said, we should really be doing this for other people. And so we built a platform where we could do record retrieval outside. Mm-hmm. And then like the staffing company, when COVID happened, we started hiring internationally and we did it for ourselves. And then I had friends that asked me, hey, could you do it for us? So we started a full-fledged academy and started hiring in Colombia and Peru and putting people through the academy and training them and certifying them and then outsourcing them to other law firms. So a lot of the business ideas came from problems that we found in our own law practice, then tested them, proved them, and then rolled them out to help other people.
In addition to the ones that you mentioned, what are some of other areas that you cover in law? And what does the, if you can kind of describe the ideal client of yours?
So the law firm is an injury and disability law firm, meaning we do personal injury. Personal injury is basically any injury that happens as a result of someone else's fault or negligence. Mm-hmm. So we do obviously the most obvious car accidents, slip and falls, premises liability, dog bites, really the whole gamut. And then in addition to that, we started doing Social Security disability. So mm-hmm. helping people who, you know, have worked their whole life and either had a catastrophic illness or injury and want to get their Social Security disability at an early age before retirement because they're no longer capable of working mm-hmm. and fighting the government in order to help people get their rights and their benefits. And then we started doing veterans disability. So I'm a veteran. I was in the U.S. Army Reserve and the Rhode Island National Guard as an MP. And so that's near and dear to my heart and helping that population. Same thing, right? So they suffered either a serious injury or catastrophic event or illness and helping them get the benefits they're entitled to from the government as well.
Wow. And what do you enjoy the most with regards to your practice? And what does success mean to you when it comes to running a modern day law firm?
So the thing that I enjoy the most really is the thread that has been weaved throughout my entire life. So at 16 years old, I became an EMT and I started volunteering on a volunteer rescue squad in New Jersey, which is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And from there, right, I went into the military to serve. Then I became a police officer and then the law firm. And really, helping other people and making a difference in people's lives has been the consistent thread that is the thing that motivates me every day to get up.
I love that answer because that's at the top of the list for me too. You know, it's not about the money and the accolades and all that. That all comes, you do a good job, you help people out, but that's the most important thing in life is helping people.
I 100% agree. And so that's really where all of our community efforts have come from. The money is great. And the money is what really allows us to give back to the community. So mm-hmm. at Thanksgiving, we give our team the day off and then we buy food at a local grocery store. We use Shaw's, have been a great partner. And this past year we fed 500 people. So we package the food and then we deliver it to their homes. This year we're going to do 750 and next year 1,000 people. And then we created a drunk driving prevention program. So we built a really cool app that you can download in the app store. And so basically we load it full of free certificates for Uber or Lyft rides. Mm-hmm. And when you download the certificate in my app, if you have Uber on your phone, it simultaneously uploads into your Uber app. And then 7 holidays a year, we give people free rides home.
That's beautiful. I always said if I had $1 billion, I'd spend my whole life giving it away.
Yeah, that would be an amazing experience.
You know, when it comes to animals, children, senior citizens, anyone with any disability or handicap, I'm a big 6 foot, 240-pound marshmallow. It's everybody else that I have a little difficulty with, but that would be amazing to be able to spend your whole life doing something like that.
Yeah, it'd be nice. First of all, it'd be nice to have the options to decide all the places you could spend $1 billion to help people.
Yeah, it is a dream of my wife and I. I mean, we certainly do things that you do as well, giving back to the community, and we're very involved with our church doing things like that. And our time. Our time is a big one too, not just writing checks and things like that. But that's wonderful. Looking at your book, what was the genesis behind the ebook, Maximizing Law Firm Success?
So all of the consulting that we do, right, through we have a mastermind group where we have law firms that belong to my mastermind group, and we Zoom with them on a weekly basis, and then we meet with them twice a year in person. And being able to help a law firm identify where there's room for improvement, where there's room for growth, even figure out what they want to be, right? Some law firms, you ask them, you know, what's your goal? And they're not even sure. So help them figure out what they want to be and figure out how to project that forward and get there. It's awesome, right? So while I love helping individuals, it's just as much fun to be able to help somebody's business grow.
And that was really, I think everyone has a book in them, to be honest with you. Some people have multiple books.
Right.
And I know when I wrote my first book, it was almost like giving birth to a child. You know, it was almost like one of my children. And I just wanted to give back to society. And that first book just exploded, not just with the ability to move it off the shelf, but to incorporate it into my future career as a sales trainer and so forth. So that's wonderful. And you also mentioned Mastermind Group. You must have read Think and Grow Rich, right?
Yes.
I always think of mastermind groups with Napoleon Hill.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, but yeah, that's a great book.
Dust it off. It's a good one. Now, in the book, Maximizing Law Firm Success, you talk a lot about focusing on high value tasks and how law firm owners identify what those are and what how to make the shift effectively. Can you elaborate on that?
So there's really only three ways a law firm can make more money, right? So number one is you have to get more clients. So figuring out your message, your brand, your marketing, how do I get my phone ring more and bring in more business? The second, right, you can not really increase revenue, but you increase bottom line by running an effective business. So controlling expenses, figuring out your projections, your balance sheet, and really growing your net profit. And the only other way to increase the revenue is to increase the value of your cases. And so when I bring a case in the door, so I increase my marketing and the phone rings and more come in the door, the goal is to maximize the value of each of those cases, right? So figuring out the right investigation, the right treatment plan, medical management, and really making sure that not only from a perspective of dollars, but that the client's getting the right treatment, right? Our healthcare system is broken. There aren't too many people that wouldn't agree with that.
Understatement. Yep.
Right. And so when that client is getting treatment, it's an uphill battle. So first of all, if they come from a personal injury accident, there's lots of doctors who stigmatize that and don't necessarily look at what's in the best interest of their patient and the care that they need. Lots of doctors are controlled by now insurance companies. So they're bought to keep down the costs, not order objective testings, MRIs, CAT scans, and different things like that. And so our job is to educate the client, medically manage them, and make sure they get the treatment they need, one, so they get better, and two, I mean, the reality is they hired us to zealously advocate for them. That doesn't only mean in court, but that means in all aspects of their life, and what they need is to really make sure they're getting the treatment they need, which increases the value of their case.
It's fascinating because when I think about being a lawyer, and you know, I guess I'm very educated from watching all of these law firm TV programs from the last 35 years. But if I were an attorney, I like to consider myself a very moral person. And that being said, it would be hard for me to take on a client that I knew in my heart was guilty just because they had loads of money. They're backing up the Brinch truck for me to get them off, if you will. That's always been a conundrum with me if I was in that profession. I just wanted to share that with you as in a personal note, what you thought of that.
When I first started practicing, I took everything that came in the door, right? Hung a shingle. So we did some criminal, we did some bankruptcy, we did some family law, some personal injury, I did a real estate transactions. And so I had a friend when I first became a police officer, he was a prosecutor. And mm-hmm. so my first DWI case was his first prosecution of a DWI. And so it went to trial and we did the whole thing together. And then he left and went into private practice as a criminal defense lawyer. And then I ended up with the injury and became a lawyer. And so I had a criminal case that came in the door and I called him and it wasn't, it was a child molestation case. And so I said to him, how do you do it? I said, how do you do it? How do you stomach it? And so his response was, I look at the person sitting across the desk from me and I think, what is the most I can charge this person? And then I double it. And if they pay me, I can do it. And I thought to myself, there is no way that I'm going to be able to sleep at night. I'm going to go through life with that mentality. And I said, well, I'm going to send this person to you and we're not doing criminal cases anymore. And at the time, you know, we had done stupid things, DWIs and possession of marijuana, little stuff. But as you grow a reputation, bigger cases come in the door. And as a retired police officer, it seemed to attract it. And there's just no way I couldn't do it.
Well, I mean, I just learned a lot about your character just now in that answer. It's not always about the money, you know, it really never isn't. It's about morality.
Right.
So
100%.
I have, like you said, you wouldn't be able to sleep at night. You have a conscience and someday you're going to have to, you know, we'll have to speak to our maker. So,
right.
Looking back at the book again, delegation and outsourcing are also big themes in the book.
Yeah.
What do you say to law firm leaders who feel hesitant or maybe a little bit unsure about letting go of total control?
So the biggest problem when you see a law firm owner, first of all, is that they're typically working in the business. So I think we've all heard a lot about the statement on the business versus in the business. Mm-hmm. And lawyers practice law. And so you can't practice law full time and grow your practice unless you hire someone to be the CEO, the visionary, and really put you on a path for growth, because someone has to spend some time figuring out what are the next steps and how do I grow. And so that's our first struggle I find with most people that I consult in even small to mid-sized law firms, is teaching them how to slide that scale of time so that we're practicing law some part of our time, but we're putting time aside for being the visionary, being the CEO, being the big picture thinker and where we want to go. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's about empowering the people below you and trusting your team, right, to carry out the mission and do the work, and for you to be able to trust people and delegate and make sure that things are done well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Walt Disney, not the company today, but the man. Yeah, who's been gone a very long time. He died in 1966. But
yeah,
you know, you talk about a visionary. You talk about someone that was able to delegate, find people that were better than him, better at animating, better at everything. But he was always able to find that talent, inspire that talent, give them the resources to be successful. He would challenge them to create things that hadn't been done yet, ever. Just throw a boatload of money at them and said, you know, figure it out. And I love that. And it's not easy as an entrepreneur. You know, people want to wear those 17 hats and they're afraid to give up control, but you're going to go crazy. So you got to build the right team. You got to build trust, things like that. So that's got to be very valuable when you're consulting with law firms on that. Now, I understand that you've also built teams that include remote and international staffs. What has been some of the biggest lessons or surprises in managing that kind of a workforce?
So that really came out of COVID. So for me personally, COVID was a game changer. It opened our eyes. It changed the way we thought about things. It changed our culture. And so that was our first foray into hiring internationally. Mm-hmm. And so my team, quite frankly, was against it. People didn't think that it would work. So it was my mission in the beginning, right? I didn't delegate it. nobody wanted to take on the responsibility. So our first team back then, we hired 6 people in Colombia. We trained them internally. And some of them are still with us today. You're talking 5 years later. Mm-hmm. 2 of them are actually managers now. And so what we realized was, as the world becomes more and more savvy about technology and the ability to have remote teams, instead of focus on a little pool of Rhode Island and hiring people in this small area, number one, just in the United States, I can now look for talent anywhere across the country. But then you expand that mindset and think about, I can hire anywhere in the world. And we have team members now in the Philippines, talking about far from Rhode Island, Colombia, Peru, Puerto Rico, and all over the United States. So really, it's just been a game changer for us.
And I'd like to think that by being able to do these remote type activities and hiring people and empowering them and training them properly and trusting them, that it helps your clients from a fiscal perspective.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I mean, you know, we're a contingency fee law firm. Everything we do is based on contingency, but it not only fiscal, but it allows you to find the best given talent. And so when you restrict yourself to a smaller geographic area, it's hard to find always A players, right? So imagine you were the Patriots and you were going to hire the next Tom Brady, and right. you were restricted to hiring somebody in Massachusetts, you know, makes it pretty difficult. But when you can expand that reach all over the United States, you know, it really opens doors. When you can expand it all over the world, it's unstoppable.
Yeah. What our audience doesn't know is, in our conversation prior, we were talking about how great the Patriots were with Brady and how it's very difficult to be a fan of that team now, but we shall see what happens.
It's only a matter of time.
That's right. Your lips to the Lord's ears.
Keep the faith.
That's right. Now, from looking at a law firm owner that's maybe just starting out, or they're feeling kind of stuck, what's the first step that you would recommend from your own playbook to get them to be unstuck? Or what are some tidbits you would give them to really, you know, go in an upward projection?
So you said something earlier about Walt Disney and surrounding himself with really intelligent people. Mm-hmm. And so that's certainly one easy, great path to success, is to surround yourself with people who are smarter, more experienced than you, and trusting people and delegating and allowing them to help you grow. And so for a newer lawyer, a smaller lawyer who hasn't had the exposure to all of the possibilities and options, is finding the right mentor who's going to help you grow. And an easy way to do that is joining a mastermind group such as mine. By joining a mastermind group, you have lots of lawyers who are willing to give, willing to share, and are dedicated to helping each other all grow their law firms. So that's probably my best piece of advice, is to join a mastermind group and get a team working for you who are willing to help you grow.
That's awesome. You know, being in sales my whole life, and now sales training, there's always been a negative connotation with that word. And that can go back to Willie Loman and Death of a Salesman, and movies like Glengarry, Glenn Ross, and Tin Men, and what have you, and how they paint that picture. But I'm here to tell you that there are some good salespeople out there that have a conscience and that do care about their clients. And it's funny, because not just the sales profession, but, you know, when you hear the word lawyer, you know, how would you defend, you know, like I'm talking to someone right now who takes the moral high ground and has a conscience and really cares about his clients. What would you say? How would you defend the profession when somebody says the word lawyer, like when someone says to me salesperson?
I mean, the first thing I usually say is there's good, bad, and ugly in every profession.
That's right.
So I was a police officer. good, bad, and ugly, right? Mm-hmm. I was in the military, good, bad, and ugly. I'm a paramedic, good, bad, and ugly. It's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You can't hold an entire profession to the experience of a few bad actors. We're always going to have bad actors, right? People are greedy. People make mistakes. It's life. And so I would say that in general, people become lawyers because they want to help other people and they want to make a difference in our society. It's expensive to go to law school. It's a tremendous commitment of time and energy. And sure, some people get through that probably shouldn't, but the vast majority do it because they're committed.
That's awesome. I can remember in college how challenging some of those final exams were. And, you know, I like to say that I got A's and B's, so not to sound braggadocious, but I just remember studying and all that. What's it like to take the bar?
Not easy. So it's really weird that if you look at medical school compared to law school, so mm-hmm. getting into medical school is super difficult, but then they're committed to helping you get through medical school, passing the exam, and becoming a doctor. Law school is not that hard to get into.
Yeah.
And the bar is really the barrier to becoming a lawyer. And there are people who never pass the bar. Wow. You don't meet very many people who graduate from medical school and don't pass the exam. Most people get through medical school, they're doctors. Mm-hmm. There is definitely a huge glut of lawyers who never practice because they can't pass the bar. The first time passing rate in some states is as low as 60%. That means 40% of the people who take the bar don't pass it. That's crazy.
I remember after I graduated from college, I was considering becoming a history teacher. That was my major. And then I got into sales. And my first rodeo was MetLife. You know, so now I'm selling life insurance, health insurance, annuities, car insurance, all that. And I remember going to take that test, and I'm in a room with like 500 people, but it wasn't just Met. It was Pru, you know, a whole bunch of different people represented there. And everyone was like, oh, this is my fifth time taking this test. This is my third time. And, you know, each time it's like $500. And I'm like, oh boy. And I've always, you know, I'm an outlier. I don't care what other people say. You know, I'm committed to doing what I need to do and whatnot. But it wasn't pleasant hearing everyone say those types of things. And I'm the kind of person that I study and I prepare, and I'm not nervous when I do something, when I take a test or when I go out onto the football field and play a game. It's the results afterwards, like when they're going to hand you your grade back. That's where it's like, okay, I know I did well, but still. But I just remember how crazy that was. And I think it was like a 50% pass rate back then on that. So I can relate. I'm sure the bar was harder than, you know, the ability to sell life insurance, but it wasn't easy. Trust me. So, but you got through it.
That's right.
That first try, right?
On the first try, three times I took the bar in Rhode Island.
Okay.
And back then you couldn't take Rhode Island and Massachusetts together. So 6 months later, I then took the bar in Mass and passed. And then 6 months later, I took the bar in Connecticut and passed.
Wow.
So I've taken the bar exam three times.
That just seems like a waste.
It was a ridiculous waste. Today, they have something called the UBE, which is the Uniform Bar Exam. There's probably like 36 or 38 states that subscribe to it. So you can take one exam. And then each state can set its own passing level. But as long as you pass the state's requirement, you can pay for your license in any state you want by taking the test once.
Okay.
Much better system.
Yeah. Yeah, compared to having to do it in every state that you want to practice in.
Right, exactly.
Eesh. So tell me, what's next for you? What new projects or opportunities do you have coming up that you are personally excited about?
So there's actually two that literally just happened. Oh. So I own a company called Drive Your Art, which is driveyourart.com. And so that is the first thing that I've done really completely since I've started practicing law out of the circle that I'm in every day, right?
Yeah.
Legal solutions and legal businesses. So DriveYourArt is a SaaS designed for large format art designers. Mm. And so today, if you, let's say you're a billboard designer, you design them. Mm-hmm. And so you have a customer says, this is what I want. You design it. So as the designer, you send the proof to your customer. It's about 2 inches by 8 inches in a PDF. So you look at this thing on your monitor, 2.5 feet, 3 feet from your face, that's 2 inches by 8 inches. And not only you, but the designer are both imagining what it's going to look like. A standard billboard, let's say 14 feet by 48 feet on mm-hmm. a highway going 60 miles an hour, or it's in a city and it's 100 foot by 300 foot wrap around a building. And you're trying to imagine that by looking at your screen. And so obviously running a law firm that we do a lot of advertising, I've done a lot of billboards. And so some billboards look great and they work, and some billboards look great on my screen. And then we put them up on the highway and I think, wow, we missed the mark on that one. And so there is no software where you can either use what I'll call the real world and take your billboard artwork, put it into a platform, lay it onto the actual billboard you want to use, zoom in and zoom out and see what it looks like, or a virtual reality where you create an environment, city, highway, rural, country, whatever you want, upload your artwork into the system, get in a car and drive, adjust the speed, adjust the distance, adjust the weather, adjust the sun, and see what your artwork is going to literally look like in those real world conditions. And so we patented it.
Wow.
US, Japan, China, all of the EU and Canada. And it launches this month, coming up in May. We're going to be at our first show on May 7th in Boston. And so we'll see. The goal is to sell it to build anyone who does large format art, bus shelters, buses, taxi cabs, billboards, obviously. And we're going to take our foray into something different.
Wow, that's revolutionary.
Yeah, it's definitely revolutionary. It doesn't exist. Our patent lawyer, unless my patent lawyer totally screwed up, we couldn't find anybody who does it besides us.
So that was one of two things you're excited about. What was the other thing?
So the other thing is I'm actually speaking in Utah coming up in May, and the name of the seminar is called Disruption. It's put on by a company called Hona, which is a company that I use in my law firm. And so they wanted me to talk about, you know, what's going to happen in the legal industry, what's disrupting. And so what's going to be the big disruption is AI.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yep. And so I actually became a partner in a company. We signed the paperwork maybe 2 weeks ago called mm-hmm. Faster Outcomes, which is fasteroutcomes.com. And so it's an AI generative company. Number one, we're releasing the early stuff. We can do now demand letters through AI. We can do medical chronologies through AI. But what's really cool, and the first release is coming in 2 or 3 weeks, is called Knowledge. So Knowledge is, imagine I came into your law firm and all the repetitive tasks that you do every day, and law firms have tremendous volumes of repetitive tasks.
Yeah.
I took you the entire database of knowledge from your law firm, and I uploaded it into an LLM, right? A large language model. And so we seal it, so it's closed in a vertical that doesn't go out to the public. It's not like a ChatGPT. Nobody else can see it. Nobody else has access to it. Mm-hmm. And now the little assistants, right, the AI bots, are learning all of the material, and we train them on everything that they need to know. And now you can communicate with the system and say, I need a letter for this client. And it has access to your case management system. It has access to the information you use. Or I want you to review these medical records and tell me what treatment am I missing? What would be best to improve the value of this case? How do I do this for the client? Is there any information as to a TBI? What should be the next thing for this client? And how do I grow the value of this case? All the things that lawyers struggle to do every day in repetition, we're going to create the AI to do it for them.
And then you're going to solicit that to law firms all over the place.
Across the country, baby.
Wow. You are on top of your game.
Trying. It's a journey.
Yes. Life is definitely a journey for sure. This has been fantastic, Rob. I really enjoyed it. I'm sure our listeners did too. Now, what if they wanted to get a hold of you and potentially use your services? What would be the best way for them to get a hold of you? What would you like to share?
My email address is my name. It's rob@roblevine.com. roblevine.com.
Excellent. So they can just check out the site and then reach out to you.
You got it. So the sites are, the law firm is roblevine.com, easy, and then roblevinelegalsolutions.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I really want to thank you for joining me on BizWiz today. Just a wonderful show and so much good information to share. And I just wanted to wish you all the continued success in the world, especially with those two new projects. That's going to be pretty amazing.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Rob. Take care.
Same here.
Want to learn more about our BizWiz guest today? Check out the show notes for contact information and get wiser starting right now. Until next time, get wiser and become a BizWiz. Thanks for tuning in.